Video streaming tonight, but we will be back online with that tomorrow night. 40 years ago, about noon, 4 students were shot dead and 9 wounded when Ohio National Guardsmen shot into a war protest. About 2,000 kids at Kent State University. The officials at that school had banned the protest, and the governor of Ohio at the time called in the guard after students at Kent State, like students around the world, reacted to the news that the U.S. was secretly bombing Cambodia, thanks to Richard Nixon. The killings of these students led almost immediately to a student strike of 4 million students on 900 campuses. Half those campuses closed for the year without exams. About 100,000 people went to Washington that weekend to protest the war and the killings. Nixon was sent to Camp David for his own safety, and the 82nd Airborne wore combat gear inside the White House. The government was worried. 10 days later, 2 students were killed by state police at Jackson State University in Mississippi. And for millions of Americans, the idea that determined street protest would ever be viewed as tolerable to the powers that be was over. The killings at Kent State showed how afraid the Nixon government was of the youth in the country. Also, how afraid they were of the truth about the Vietnam War. And from that point on until the war ended, student protest grew. From Sarah and Aaron, Mike, it's my understanding that the type of crude oil spewing into the Caribbean is water soluble. My question, what happens in a few weeks when hurricane after hurricane starts picking up this poisonous water and dumping it all over the southeastern United States? Could there be any other reasons that BP wants waivers signed by local residents? Say, maybe to avoid the thousands of potential cancer and property damage lawsuits that seem imminent. Am I off base with a thought like this? I would really like you guys to put me at ease a bit on this issue. Sarah and Aaron. I don't have an answer to that, Aaron, Sarah. I really don't. I don't know what water soluble means. It seems to me that, I mean, oil is not water soluble. I mean, water and oil is the classic, they don't mix. So I'm not sure. I heard somebody else use that term, somebody in media or someplace over the past few days. So I'm going to have to plead ignorant on that. Prairie, too, who sent me a couple of missives about this, might want to weigh in on this if he's listening and just send me something about what all this means. All right. During the first part of the program and possibly most of the program tonight, I'm going to stay away from what's going on in the Gulf. There's nothing to add to it. The situation is worsening as far as I can determine. And I just can't deal with it tonight. You know, I just can't, it's not about me. It's about this horrendous catastrophe. All I'm saying is I can't focus on it on the program tonight like we did last night. I can't do it. So we'll try to get back to it again tomorrow night. However, the Christian world in the United States seems to be, I think the Christian God is furious at these bastards. Furious. I really do think the Christian God is warning the Christians that he's going to kill them all. There's not going to be any rapture. There's not going to be heaven. He's going to beat their asses into the ground. I think this Christian God that they came up with is that they created, you know, they breathe life into him. I think he is furious. You want some examples? John Ponder writing at, where was this? It's on a blog site someplace. Somebody sent it to me. It's very good stuff. And he points out that when these horrific disasters strike, it doesn't take long for the TV prophets to declare them signs of God's wrath. And equally predictable from these thugs is God's punishments are always closely aligned with the right-wing political views of these freaks on television, like the late Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or John Hagee, the rest of these thugs. You ever notice that? God's attitudes are almost the same of these right-wing cretinous bastards' views. Interesting. It's amazing. I had no idea that God was such a right-wing thug. Anyway, it's notable, then, that with the biggest ever oil slick bearing down on Gulf Coast beaches and all these deadly tornadoes and floods that we've been having across the South, 29 people dead in Tennessee and Mississippi. All this disaster that's going on, interpreters of divine vengeance have been very quiet lately. Huh? Now, that's not like these right-wing Christian thug bastards that populate the airwaves and populate, especially here in the South. If you remember, within 48 hours after 9/11, Pat Robertson and the now dead and burning in hell Jerry Falwell were on the air expressing what appeared to be inside knowledge about who is really to blame for those attacks. Here's the way it went down. Falwell: what we saw on Tuesday, as terrible as it is, could be minuscule if in fact God continues to lift the curtain and allow the enemies of America to give us probably what we deserve. Pat Robertson: Jerry, that's my feeling. I think we've just seen the antechamber to terror. We haven't even begun to see what they can do to the major population. Falwell: the ACLU's got to take a lot of blame for this. Robertson: well, yes. Falwell: and I know that I hear from them for this, but throwing God out successfully with the help of the federal court system, throwing God out of the public square, out of the schools, the abortionists have got to bear some burden for this, because God will not be mocked unless it's by me. And when we destroy 40 million little innocent babies, we make God mad. I really believe that the pagans and the abortionists and the feminists and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, people of the American way, all of them who have tried to secularize America, I point the finger in the face and say, you help this happen. Remember that? And after Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, this corpulent, meat-eating thug Hagee, Pastor Hagee, John Hagee, declared that God killed 1,800 people and destroyed the region in order to prevent an annual gay event in New Orleans. Hagee: in the case that New Orleans, their plan to have that homosexual rally was sin. But it never happened. The rally never happened. He was on the air with right-wing thug Dennis Prager. Prager said, no, I understand. Hagee: it was scheduled for that Monday. Prager: no, I'm only trying to understand that in the case of New Orleans, you do feel that God's hand was in it because of a sinful city? Hagee: that it was a city that was planning a sinful conduct, yes. Well, God's plan worked perfectly, of course, because the event was canceled. And about a month after Katrina struck, Franklin Graham, the son of the doddering half-dead freak that lives up in the North Carolina mountains, Billy Graham, Franklin Graham blamed the victim. This is what Franklin Graham said. This is one wicked city, okay? It's known for Mardi Gras, for Satan worship. It's known for sex perversion. It's known for every type of drug and alcohol and the orgies and all of these things that go on down there in New Orleans. There's been a black spiritual cloud over New Orleans for years. They believe God is going to use that storm to bring revival. Now, if you doubt that the divine hand of providence is at work today in the oil spill disaster, You need to look no further than the fact that mighty winds are blowing the oil not southward towards communist Cuba or that bastard Hugo Chavez's Venezuela, but north toward the shores of the most hidebound conservative Christian enclaves on the planet, the side of Vatican City. More in a moment. You wish it's all.
When you walk that walk and you talk that talk.
21 past the hour. Talking about this piece, somebody emailed me today from written by John Ponder. Why is God smiting the Deep South? Very interesting because you know I hate hypocrites. I think hypocrites do more damage than religion itself, if that's possible. But I really do. Anyway, back to what John has put together here. On April 24th, just passed, as the oil spill disaster was building offshore, a series of tornadoes carved a swath of death and destruction right through the heart of the Bible Belt. What it was a supercell thunderstorm produced F4 and F3 rated tornadoes that killed at least 12 people, sent many more to area hospitals. Yazoo City, Mississippi, and Holmes County, Mississippi, were among the hardest hit areas, with an F4 tornado bringing maximum winds of about 170 miles an hour. Governor Haley Barbour, the corpulent, disgusting pig that runs Mississippi, activated the National Guard, declared a state of emergency in 17 counties. Blah, 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 blah. In Yazoo City, the twister destroyed a Baptist church. And just today, we learned that 29 people have died as a result of the storms that struck in northern Mississippi and Tennessee, stranding visitors to no less a shrine to American Christian values than Opryland, where 1,500 people had to be evacuated to a high school. Opryland is essentially destroyed. And yet, despite all this, those to whom God speaks are silent. What gives? Could it be that God has told his prophets an awful truth, that he is directing his vengeance on the Deep South because his people have lost their way? It's worth considering. For one thing, leaders in the region have been struggling with the heinous sin of adultery lately. At least two, Governor Mark Sanford, South Carolina, former Representative Chip Pickering, Mississippi, are associated with the family, a powerful Christian pressure group in Washington. Then there's Senator David Vitter, who, despite being an admitted frequenter of prostitutes, is apparently coasting to re-election this year, presumably with the votes of Republican Christians in his state. Or maybe God is punishing the Deep South, particularly the so-called Black Belt, where slavery once predominated, for clinging to racism. While liberal churches have declared racism to be a sin, conservative Christians have been steadfastly silent on the issue, even though, as one liberal denomination has said, racism destroys God's likeness in every person, thus repudiates creation and its goodness. Or could it be the Tea Party phenomenon that has angered the Almighty? The Bible warns against following false prophets like Glenn Beck, which would describe the movement's leaders to a T. The movement was built on a foundation of lies about health care reform, including that it would institute death panels, that undocumented residents would be cared for, that abortions would be covered, that would lead to government takeover. Perhaps God's angry because Tea Party leaders duped their Christian followers into going against Christ's call to care for the sick and feed the hungry, to ignore teachings like this from Ezekiel 34, verses 3 to 4. You eat the fat, You clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. The weak you have not strengthened, the sick you have not healed, the injured you have not bound up, the strayed you have not brought back, the lost you have not sought, and with force and harshness you have ruled them. God was mucho pissed off. And then there's the teabagger sin of hypocrisy, which was summed up succinctly in a sign that read, "Don't steal from Medicare to support socialized medicine." Plus, there's the hypocrisy of elected officials like Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, Tom Coburn, Oklahoma, Chuck Grassley, Iowa, Representative Michelle Bachmann, Virginia Fox, and the rest who enjoy the benefits of socialized government-run health plans but lied about reforms in order to deny access to healing to 45 million Americans. God is pissed. According to the Bible, these hypocrites are bound for hell, as detailed in Matthew 23, verses 27-28. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which outwardly appear beautiful, but inwardly are full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but inwardly ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Amen. It also has to be said that Southerners, especially those in the Deep South, are more guilty of the cardinal sin of gluttony than their fellow Americans. These modern-day Jeremiah's silence about God's wrath is also odd, since they have not hesitated to declare manifestations of God's wrath in other recent disasters. Just last month, Pastor Hagee ascribed the volcano eruption in Iceland as a manifestation of God's anger over a minor change in British policies about advertising tourism in Israel. Amen. We'll have that for you when we come back. I just need to share this with you folks tonight. Amen.
And every war we wage is in His name. We think His Bible should be taught in every nation, and we'll bomb anyone who doesn't feel the same. Welcome to Jesus' land, where we all love thy neighbor if thy neighbors understand. We won't let too many Mexicans across the Rio Grande. Welcome to Jesus.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
So we are investigating the possibility here in this segment of the program, the possibility that the Christian God is so pissed off, so enraged, has his cosmic bloomers in such a wad over what comes out of the white Christian evangelical South that he's just beating the crap out of this part of the country to make a point. Now, the reason you can come to that conclusion is because the mouthpieces for the Christian God are always talking about, well, the queers and the abortionists and the liberals and the ACLU and the feminists. Maybe it's not that at all. Maybe it's because of these hypocrites. Back to what John Ponder has posited across the internet today. Just last month, Pastor Hagee ascribed the volcano eruption in Iceland as a manifestation of God's anger over a minor change in British policies about advertising tourism in Israel. The day after Britain's Advertising Standards Authority said the Western Wall in Jerusalem could not be used in Israeli tourism ads in Britain because it is considered occupied territory, Hagee said the volcano erupted, shutting down Britain's economy in one day. That's coincidence! Like the flood was a coincidence!
That's coincidence like the Red Sea was coincidence. That's coincidence like the earthquake and the resurrection was coincidence.
Hagee told about 3,200 people at Lancaster, PA Convention Center on Thursday night as part of the John Hagee Ministries Rally and Prophecy Seminar. No less a sinner than Rush Limbaugh. Gluttony, sloth, vainglory, pride, etc., etc. No less a sinner than Rush Limbaugh has declared that the volcano eruption was God's vengeance for the passage of health care reform in the United States. He said,
you know, a couple of days after the health care bill had been signed into law, Obama ran around the country saying, hey, you know, I'm looking around, the earth hasn't opened up. There's no Armageddon out there. The birds are still chirping. I think the earth has opened up. God may have replied, this volcano in Iceland has grounded more airplanes than even after 9/11 because of this plume, because of this ash cloud over northern and western Europe. At the Paris airport, they're telling people to head to the train station to catch trains. And when people get to the train station, they're telling people there aren't any seats left until at least April 22nd. I don't know whether it's a rebirth of Armageddon. Hopefully it's a rebirth. God speaking.
In January, after the devastating earthquake in Haiti, Pat Robertson relayed a message from above, declaring that the quake was caused by a deal struck with Satan over 200 years ago by Haitian slaves seeking to overthrow the island's French colonial government. Remember that, truth seekers? A deal they assumedly made after Jesus turned down a chance to free the slaves. And speaking of Robertson, no recounting of attributions of God's wrath can go without mentioning his prophetic blunder 12 years ago, an act of hubris that ought to serve as an object lesson for those like Hagee, Franklin Graham, Limbaugh, Falwell, and Robertson himself, who commit the sin Jesus decried when he says, judge not, lest ye be judged. What was it? In 1998, Robertson warned the residents of Orlando that God was sending a hurricane to wipe out their city. Not because of anything they had done, per se, but because private groups not associated with the city were holding annual Gay Day celebrations at nearby Disney World. But while Orlando went unsmited by storms that year, just a few months after Robertson warned of God's vengeance in Orange County, Hurricane Bonnie traveled up the East Coast, took aim at Robertson's own 700 Club compound at Virginia Beach, and swept right through. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Amen and amen. John Ponder. J-O-N-P-O-N-D-E-R, if you want to look him up. Good piece, John. And then there's this. Over at Raw Story, they put this out today, this afternoon. A Christian leader and prominent neuropsychiatrist who co-founded the Family Research Council with evangelist James Dobson took a 10-day European vacation with a call boy he met through rentboy.com. And he was caught in an airport with the escort by a Miami newspaper. The escort said he had met the prominent Christian, George Rekers, R-E-K-E-R-S, George Rekers, professor of neuropsychiatry and behavioral sciences at the University of South Carolina, on rentboy.com. Rekers, when confronted, didn't deny that he'd met the call boy online, but said he had hired him to help him carry his baggage. And didn't learn he was generally hired for private company until midway through his European vacation. Rekers told the Miami New Times, I had surgery and I can't lift luggage. That's why I hired him. The paper noted that it didn't stop him from pushing what the paper described as a tottering pile of luggage to the Miami International Airport. The call boy, identified by a pseudonym, told the New Times, Penn Bullock and Brandon Thorpe, that Rekers claimed that he didn't know his line of work seemed spurious. The call boy said, quote, he should have been able to tell you that, but that's up to him. According to the writers, the slender 20-year-old escort's profile advertises his smooth, sweet, tight blank and perfectly built blank, blank, blank. I just can't say that on the air here. Wayne Besson, a prominent opponent of the ex-gay, so-called ex-gay movement, and director of the nonprofit Truth Wins Out, said, quote, it is clear that the Wreckers, Professor Wreckers, has baggage and certainly needs help. Referring to South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, a conservative who claimed he was hiking when he'd actually been meeting with a mistress, Wayne Besson added, at least he didn't say he was walking the Appalachian Trail. Besson added, this is a bombshell that completely discredits the ex-gay industry and proves that the movement is a fraud. The paper printed emails exchanged between the professor and the escort, the call boy, prior to their trip. Wreckers co-founded the Conservative and Anti-Gay Family Research Council with Reverend James Dobson in 1983. Wreckers wrote in a March 21 email obtained by New Times, quote, I'd like to propose another trip to Rome, Italy for a week or more. This is so exciting to have a nice travel assistant and traveling companion. Wow, I'm so glad I met you. Wreckers allegedly remarked in a later email, I called and talked to the reservation guy in London and reserved a room with two twin beds. Wreckers is a prominent advocate against gays in Florida, where he lives. He testified against Florida allowing gay couples to adopt, and he asserted that children of gay couples, quote, living with a practicing homosexual in the adoptive home are especially vulnerable to psychological damage and an increasing inability to adapt, end quote. A commenter on a California Catholic daily, which reported the findings of Wreckers' investigations into gay adoption, remarked, quote, the active principle in these children's stress is the fact that their welfare comes in dead last in the homosexual lifestyle. It is oriented toward grooming them for traumatic early sexualization and exploitation by adults, end quote. The call boy told New Times that Wreckers is, quote, primarily a family man, end quote. The call boy said, you don't understand how much this guy honestly cares about taking care of kids. Wreckers, the author of Growing Up Straight, What Families Should Know About Homosexuality. So there you go.
Is he going to use the Larry Craig, I was just wiping something off my shoe?
Oh, he just hired the call boy to help him carry his luggage for a week.
His baggage or his package?
Well, I think they said baggage. I think they meant luggage.
The problem is, see, you know, Dobson should have just taken him in the shower and shown him his penis.
That's true.
Then he wouldn't have been gay.
Texas Governor Rick Perry claimed yesterday that the oil rig explosion that caused a massive and still expanding spill may have been just an act of God that could not have been prevented. God. God decided to just... You may be right, Governor Goodhair. You just may be right. But if you are right, it's because of the hypocrisy here in the evangelical South. Franklin Graham, Reverend, the evangelical minister who was, thank you, Jesus, disinvited from a Pentagon prayer service after concerns arose regarding his past offensive comments about Islam, is now accusing President Obama of, quote, giving Islam a pass. In an interview with Newsmax Television, Graham was asked if he thought there was a pattern of hostility to traditional Christianity by the Obama administration. Graham responded, I don't know if it's exactly from President Obama, but I'm certain that some of the men around him are very much opposed to what we stand for and what we believe. More from Franklin Graham in a minute.
You'll learn all you need to learn at my ministry. And pay no attention to the slanderous lies. I never had my hand between that young boy's thighs. I'm with the God Squad. So listen good, hear my battle cry down in Hollywood. I'm with the God Squad.
Mm-hmm.
time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. So Franklin Graham, who is one of the most screwed up people on earth, at least in this part of the earth, who professes to be a man of God because he's terrified that his father Billy has condemned him to everlasting hellfire and damnation. Franklin Graham, who has gone after the Muslims, that's what Franklin Graham's ministry is all about, going after Muslims. Anyway, now he's accusing Barack Obama of giving the Muslims, in Graham's word, a pass. Graham was asked on Newsmax television, what the hell is that? Is that the little screens they put in outhouses or in bathrooms and gas stations so while you're taking care of business you can watch Newsmax television? I think so. He was asked on that putrid network about mounting secular oppression in the United States. That's the other thing. Evangelical Christians are all paranoid. I mean, they're diagnosable, clinically paranoid. Secular oppression in the United States? Ruling after ruling says these crazy bastards can run rampant over over secular rights, over the separation of church and state. It doesn't matter anymore, and yet they still talk about secular oppression. Graham said on the bathroom television network, no question it's coming. I think when you preach that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the light, I think we're going to see one day people will say this is hate speech. Hate speech? The Reverend described his removal from the Pentagon prayer service program as a slap in the face at all evangelical Christians. Graham also expanded on the toilet TV program, his viewpoint on Islam. He said, quote, I don't believe Muhammad can lead anybody to God. I love Muslim people and I care for them very much. And I want Muslims everywhere to know what I know, that Jesus Christ died for their sins. Just never stops, does it? Never stops. So I agree with John that in the fantasy world of evangelical Protestant Christianity, their demonic God is pissed thoroughly and completely. You know, you don't see all this happening in Wisconsin or Montana or Maine. You see it all happening here in the buckle of the Bible Belt. God is beating the hell out of everybody down here because he's tired. Tired, I tell you. Amen. He's tired of this. He's tired of Glenn Beck and Rick Goodhair Perry and Reverend Dobson and all these people who would demonize members of his creation, gay folk. He's tired of it. Well, if you read your Bible like I have, you understand that when God gets pissed off, the Christian, Judeo-Christian God gets pissed off, blood flows like water. The innocent are butchered as well as the guilty. There is no mercy, nothing. Plagues of locusts and blood and death and destruction cover the land because this Judeo-Christian God is one perverted deity. He doesn't care. He's not selective. I'll kill all of you. I'll kill your children and your babies in your bellies. This is a bad dude, I'm telling you. But the evangelical Christians know that. That's why they try to deflect his wrath onto gay folk or Muslims or eventually the Jews or liberals or Democrats or the ACLU or feminists. But guess what, boys? It's not working. You haven't prayed You haven't done your imprecatory prayer hard enough to destroy gay people and liberal people and common sense people and atheist people and ACLU people and liberal people and progressive people and people who just want to live their damn lives free from your this sick, chained, murderous, violent, vicious religion of yours. And the Judeo-Christian God always said, hey, look, let me tell you something. Listen up. Here I am. I am here. All ye who know me, know me. Ye who don't, don't. You know, this God that these sick bastards profess to follow, he didn't say go out and conquer the world. He didn't say make everybody believe in me. He just put it, left it pretty ambiguous, you know. Here I am. I am here. So anyway, I think their God has had enough. And he is furious. But being the crazed deity, all deities are crazy. I mean, all of them. They're arrogant, self-centered, murderous collections of wrong thinking. And because this particular God is so pissed off, a lot of people are going to die. A lot of people are going to drown. A lot of people are going to burn. Isn't that sad? At least in the minds of these evangelical Christians. Oh, John Ponder, you can get that piece I shared with you at Pensito, P-E-N-S-I-T-O, PensitoReview.com. Pensito, P-E-N-S-I-T-O, Review.com. We'll be back after the break. Amen. The hour. This is the Malloy program.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Russ says, well, I agree that the caller probably is an ass blank. What he said is true. They're constructing three giant domes that they hope to install by the end of the week that will cap the leaks. I doubt it will work, but that's what they're trying. Yeah, thanks, Russ. I knew about that. I didn't know what you meant, Kath. A dome over this thing. Why has it taken as long as it has taken? I just think that if you are going to literally punch a hole into the seabed and bring up oil with a capacity to destroy everything it touches, if it touches anything in a natural environment, whether it is refined or not refined. And you do this without a system of fail-safe devices, then you are an unconscionable criminal. And I think every oil company, every mining company, every natural gas company, every nuclear power plant that operates without, if it's possible, backup after backup after backup is a filthy, criminal, murderous enterprise. And they will either kill people, they will kill the environment, they will kill life on Earth. I'm just getting so sick of this. I'm getting so sick of it. I'm sick of these filthy goddamn Republicans. I'm sick of the corporate predatory corporate practices. I'm sick of it. And it's just going to continue until we make it stop. I mean that. I don't. Yeah, you know, I'm kind of lost. I'm lost for words. I keep coming back to that. I'm lost for words. I don't know anything that I were to say. As far as I'm concerned, anything that I would say about this disaster, this catastrophe, would be trite. It would be filled with clotted emotion, because I can't seem to get my mind straight about this issue. I can't come up with a thread of thought, you know, to pursue, to say, okay, A, B, C, D regarding this. It's just a mass of swirling images, and fear and rage. I mean, what, you take a look at what has happened. I mean, just take a chunk of recent history. Start about 1991 with the first invasion of Iraq. So, what, 19 years? Just take a look at that period of time. It seems like the destruction of everything has been accelerated. And all of it is being carried out by the same sons of bitches. I'm sorry for the language. I'm just furious. The same gang. Over and over and over again, whether it's predatory capitalism on Wall Street, predatory capitalism in the energy business, predatory capitalism in the food industry, predatory capitalism, I don't care where it is. It just keeps going on and going on and going on to the point where, you know, to sit here and talk about this over and over again. And then you watch these half-witted teabaggers running around with this monstrous idiot from Wasilla going, drill, baby, drill. And the bagger saying, well, where's his birth certificate? I mean, Jesus God, it's almost like being in a madhouse. Not almost, it really is. What the hell has happened? So it is difficult for me to develop any linear thought here. It's getting harder and harder. You better take over the program, Kathy.
I just had a caller call in that wanted us, you to know that Rachel Maddow spent the last few minutes of her program blasting the corporate greed that allowed such a disaster to happen. So there has been at least one person with some prime time exposure to place the blame where it's due.
Good. Good for Rachel. If anybody in corporate media were going to do it, it would be her. No offense to Keith Olbermann. At all, but if anybody were going to do it, it would be Rachel. Bless her heart. I think it's easier for people who work. It's almost easier for people who work in a more structured environment, corporate media, like Olbermann, like Rachel, to maintain some kind of point A to point B to C to D. Type of linear thought. It's very difficult for me to do that. I just get so caught up in the crazed emotions about all this stuff. that I start to melt. You know what I'm saying? And I don't have an executive producer, well, Kathy, but I mean, I'll have somebody to kick my ass and say, stop indulging, stop the self-indulgence, do your program. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll try to do the program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Thanks to the people in the video chat room. I'm just too slow to do that. I log in and I'm sitting there trying to type something. And, sorry. All right, it is time for another report card from Kate Petrini, our education affairs correspondent, who teaches school in San Francisco. The subject line of this report card is, what kind of socialism? Hi, Mike. Wanted to write you about my lesson plan the other day before I forget about it. In U.S. history, we are covering the beginning of the Cold War. One of the activities I have the students do each year focuses on a series of cartoons representing capitalism and socialism as competing ideologies. In the past, I've approached this by breaking it down into economic systems, capitalism slash socialism, and political systems, communism slash democracy. But this year, because of the teabaggers calling the president a communist, fascist, socialist, I decided to go one step further. On the board, I drew three columns and labeled them communist socialism, national socialism, and democratic socialism. When I asked the students what kind of government prevailed in the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, they were correctly able to identify both and label them as totalitarian. Thankfully, most of the kids remember seeing the film Europa, Europa, which does a spectacular job of showing the commonalities and differences between communism and fascism. Next, we went on to democratic socialism. When I asked what kind of government this name implies, I got a lot of eye rolling and more than a couple, duh. The kids immediately got that democratic socialism implies a small d democratic form of government. Most were also aware that this is the predominant form of government in Europe. To make sure they understood the concept and to bring it closer to home, I asked, what would you do if your smoke alarm went off in the middle of the night and you could see flames down the hallway? Students. Duh, I'd call 911. Me. And who would come? Students. The fire department. Me. Who pays for the fire department? Students. The government. Me. Who funds the government? Students. We do. Me. How? Students. With our taxes. We then had a similar exchange concerning the college application process, focusing on the fact that students will be using stamps purchased from the government-run post office and that a government employee called a mail carrier will deliver those applications and hopefully letters of acceptance. By the end of this lesson, students were able to grasp that democratic socialism is really not such a scary thing because, after all, they experience it in some form every single day. The key was to distinguish totalitarian socialism from the democratic form and to point out that certain sectors of the American so-called free market have been socialized as well and work just fine, thank you very much. Obviously, I don't know how well today's lesson will stick with my students, but one thing is for sure. No one will be able to throw the term socialist around in front of them without having them ask, what kind of socialism are you talking about? So, teabaggers, beware. I know a few kids who could easily make you look like total fools. then again, you don't really need any help in that department. K.
Teach your children well, 'cause their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams.
Kay Petrini is a school teacher in San Francisco and writes an occasional blog or letter to us. You can see her stuff at what is her blog site? Oh no, I'll have it here in a second. I'm sorry, Kay. It'll come in just a second. You can go to her blog site though and see all of these. Maybe you already have it written down, right? Like I should. Rick is in San Rochelle, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Michael. That's San Rochelle, California.
San Rochelle. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I had a comment, and I wanted to plug my climate change website. You know, these people who are advocating drilling in the Anwar in Alaska and the Arctic Sea, well, what would be happening right now if we had a gusher in the winter under the ice?
Yeah, really? Yeah.
And I wanted to let you know about my, I have a website that is focused largely on exposing the disinformation campaign about global warming.
Mm-hmm.
And all the phony think tanks and the oil companies and the phony scientists and everything.
Right.
And the name of it is Energy Solutions We Can Believe In. And I think people will find it very educational and interesting. I have, it's supposed to be a blog, but I really have two articles, basically, which are very long.
Mm-hmm.
The one on climate change and disinformation is about 90 pages as far as the...
Good Lord. Know.
So I just wanted to, I think it's a good resource, and it leads people to other good websites, too.
And the focal point of your site is to what?
To expose the disinformation propaganda campaign that the fossil fuel industry is fooling Americans with on global warming.
I see. In other words, the so-called counter argument that such a thing is not happening.
Yeah, which is
hogsnot.
Well, I also would highly recommend a book called Climate Cover-Up by James Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you pronounce his last name, Hoggan.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the people from the website called DeSmog Blog.
Okay, DeSmog Blog?
DeSmog Blog, yeah.
All right, what's
if people go to my website, they'll find all kinds of good websites on climate change, real ones.
What is it?
Real scientists.
What is it again, Rick?
Energy Solutions We Can Believe In at blogspot.com.
Dot blogspot.
If you just plug in the name into a search, it'll come right up.
Okay, great. All right, thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
All right, man, take it easy. Thanks for checking in. Marge? Marge is calling from the hospital. I understand it's your birthday again tomorrow, is that right?
Yeah.
Hey, Marge, how you feeling?
Well... I'm still feeling. I guess that's a step in the right direction.
Right, as long as you're feeling.
But I don't know what the hell they're doing to me.
You don't?
No, I was kind of sort of explaining that to Kathy. I didn't want to go into all that. But anyway.
Did they tell you what they're doing? Did they say open wide or here, let's put this needle in or?
Well, you know, I seemed to have a line of doctors, and I had some kind of AFib or whatever that was going towards pneumonia. And I had all these people asking me how I was breathing, how I was feeling, all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't tell me why they wanted to know. And then all of a sudden I found out. And they're great at coming in and listening a little bit, and so I'll be back. But they don't say too much. So I got to...
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
Are the police coming in to get you?
Yeah.
Oh, no. You want me to put you on hold?
Could you?
Yeah, I'll put you on hold. We'll come back in a couple of minutes and see how you're doing, Marge. They're coming in with needles and bedpans. She doesn't mind the needles. Charles is in L.A. listening to KTLK.
Yes, yes. Guess where Dick Cheney is right now?
I don't know.
He's in Saudi Arabia. That's right. They gave him a big official welcome as if he's still the vice president.
Oh, my God.
But his dirty fingers are around all of this. You know, like you were talking about before, he's the one that that said that acoustic shutoff valve wasn't necessary.
Right, right.
You know, and had that valve been, that system been put in place, we wouldn't be talking about this big oil spill today.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Halliburton. They're working on it just hours before the explosion. And then last year, in November last year, the same thing when Halliburton was working on a rig and they had a big explosion. Millions of gallons of oil went to, off the landing off the coast of Australia. That was
right.
In November.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the same people involved with this. I'd like to see Cheney be forced to come before Congress and testify under his oath, under oath about his participation in all this.
Yeah, well, he's avoided that all during the 8 years that he and his puppet were destroying the country, destroying the economy. Cheney refused subpoena after subpoena and cited separation of powers restrictions. Now that he's a private citizen, I don't see how they could force him. They could issue a citation, and if he didn't show up, charge him with contempt of Congress. But you know how that would play with the crazy people in this country. And you also know that Democrats, for the most part, when it concerns issues like this, Democrats in Congress are cowards.
Well, they need to stand up, and a lot of those people directly affected by this oil spill, a lot of them probably vote Republican.
Oh yeah,
but
oh,
they're
sure.
Going to be the ones hit hardest. So they might be, they might not, they may also want to hear what Cheney has to say about this. This is really Cheney's oil spill.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There is no doubt about that. No doubt whatsoever. And he'll get away with it. And as he got away with everything, he got away with initiating two illegal wars. He is really a ghoulish, nasty person who hangs out with the dead. That's what he likes to do. Thanks, Charles. I appreciate your call. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Say no, please don't get me wrong. If it's freeing the Iraqi people, you're after them. Why have we waited so long? Why didn't we sort this out last time? Was he less evil then than he is now? The stock market holds the answer to why him, why here, why now? 'Cause it's all about the price.
Cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. I found it. It's kaysreportcard.com. K-A-Y-S. kaysreportcard.com. That was real hard, wasn't it, Mike? It is 10 before the hour. To Michael, who's in Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
Just as frustrated as you are, I get to the point where I feel like I can't think in linear ways when I, you know, you end up in a conundrum, mental conundrum when there is so much obvious evil compounding on itself and you feel just forced into this corner.
Yeah, it's true. And let me just qualify something. You know, I've said before in this program, I don't believe in a definable inherent evil as some kind of an entity that's been introduced by religion. But I agree with you. Behavior can have evil, nasty-ass results. And I think that's what we're experiencing. That's what we've been experiencing for a long time, the behavior of the Republican leadership, in some instances the Democratic leadership. It's the behavior that generates these horrible results or reactions. And corporate behavior is just straight from hell. I mean, it's unbelievably evil.
Absolutely. I think, and anything we can do to react to it, I think is good. I mean, you at least get people to think about it and to consider, you know, the ramifications of what's going on across the nation and across the world. And, you know, people need to write letters. They need to, you know, get on the phone and call radio shows and say, you know, this is how I feel. And you know, we're not just a little minority of people, you know, but the teabaggers are not the majority, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not, although they make an awful lot of noise as if they were. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for checking in. You know, I continue to have people email me, emails that don't make it on the program, or I have phone calls with people I know, and usually in the vein that I'm talking about, the point is, you know, you need to stop talking about the symptoms, Mike, not because you have a radio program, but because, you know, just because you're a person, there's no point in our talking about this stuff. No point whatsoever talking about these what are really peripheral issues. A gushing oil explosion in the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico is a direct result of how we live. And by we, I mean the entire industrialized world. You know, melting ice caps and the change in ocean currents is a direct result of how we live. Air that we can't breathe is a direct result. Food that if we eat is going to make us sick is a direct result. I mean, all of this stuff. All of this stuff. And to focus on these little peaks that stick up through the madness, whether it's an oil spill in Alaska or a hole punched in the bottom of the ocean in the Gulf of Mexico, or murdering people with drone aircraft in Afghanistan, or overthrowing governments in the Middle East, you know, whatever it is, to focus on those peaks is to be distracted, to be completely distracted. Molly goes to a kid's yoga class once a week, and I drop her off. She has an hour, and then either I or Kathy will pick her up. I picked her up today. Got into the building where she has her yoga class with all these other little kids, and I think it's a wonderful idea. And I'm sitting there in a little waiting area, and on the table they have these cards, sayings of and by and about the Buddha. And some of these sayings come from truth seekers. Some of them come from monks and people who follow the Buddhist thought. And I'm sitting there reading those things today. And, of course, every single one made perfect sense. And I pick Molly up, and we get in the car, and we start the car. And I can't even start the car now without thinking about what I'm doing. You know, here you go again. Mike, you're turning on the key. You're going to drive 6 miles to get you and Molly home. You're going to spew this crap out of the back of your car all the way home. You're going to do this enough times until you're going to have to go fill up the gas tank again and do it again and again. And it's driving me crazy. I don't know how to reconcile this stuff. It's not the disasters. It's what's driving us to get ourselves in the position where the disasters occur. That is maddening. And it's becoming harder and harder for me, maybe it is for you too, to focus on these little peaks, these little needle points that stick up to the fabric and keep reminding us, you're screwing up, you're screwing up, you're screwing up. It's getting harder and harder to focus on that. And it's becoming impossible not to focus on the essential problem. And that is the way we're living, what we're all doing, what we have done, and whether or not we are going to pull back and stop it. And the difference between the two is what's making me crazy, literally crazy. I don't know. You know, I've said this before, and don't send me emails because I'm just blowing smoke, but it makes me feel like it's time for me to get the hell out of this business, because then I can anesthetize myself again. See, if you're not thinking about this garbage every day, you can anesthetize yourself. You can pretend it's not true, or you can refocus, or you can set it aside, or whatever. I guess. I mean, I don't know. But it's getting so difficult. Is it for you? I don't know anymore. Is it for you getting difficult to not focus on the essential problem? And that is the way we live. Ah, Christ. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I want to quote you a little bit here. Paul Noel is a software engineer. He's a contractor for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. He is founding member of the New Energy Congress. He writes, the original estimate was about 5,000 gallons of oil a day spilling into the ocean. Now they're saying 200,000 gallons a day. That's over 1 million gallons of crude oil a week. I'm an engineer with 25 years of experience. I've worked on some big projects with big machines. Maybe that's why this mess is so clear to me. First, the BP platform was drilling for what they call deep oil. They go out where the ocean is about 5,000 feet deep and drill another 30,000 feet into the crust of the earth. This is right on the edge of what human technology can do. Well, this time they hit a pocket of oil at such high pressure that it burst all of their safety valves all the way up to the drilling rig and then caused the rig to explode and sink. Take a moment to grasp the import of that. The pressure behind this oil is so high that it destroyed the maximum effort of human science to contain it. When the rig sank, it flipped over and landed on top of the drill hole some 5,000 feet under the ocean. Now they've got a hole in the ocean floor 5,000 feet down with a wrecked oil drilling rig sitting on top of it spewing 200,000 gallons of oil a day into the ocean. Take a moment and consider that, will you? First, they have to get the oil rig off the hole in order to get at it, in order to try to cap it. Do you know the level of effort it will take to move that wrecked oil rig sitting under 5,000 feet of water? That operation alone could take years and hundreds of millions of dollars to accomplish. Then, how do you cap that hole in the muddy ocean floor? There just is no way. No way. The only piece of human technology that might address this is a nuclear bomb. I'm not kidding. If they put a nuke down there, in the right spot, it might seal up the hole. Nothing short of that will work. If we can't cap that hole, the oil is going to destroy the oceans of the world. It only takes 1 quart of motor oil to make 250,000 gallons of ocean water toxic to wildlife. Are you starting to get the magnitude of this? We're so used to our politicians creating false crises to forward their criminal agendas that we aren't recognizing that we're staring straight into possibly the greatest disaster mankind will ever see. Imagine what happens if that oil keeps flowing until it destroys all life in the oceans of this planet. Who knows how big of a reservoir of oil is down there? Not to mention that the oceans are critical to maintaining the proper oxygen level in the atmosphere for human life. Now, that was not written by Paul Noel. That was written by somebody else. Response by Paul Noel. He's the engineer. I really do think that the situation is getting further and further out of hand. By yesterday morning, the nature of the crude had changed, indicating that the spill was collapsing the rock structures. How much, I cannot say. If it is collapsing the rock structures, the least that can be said is that the rock is fragmenting and blowing up the tube with the oil. With that going on, you have a high-pressure abrasive sandblaster working on the kinks in the pipe, eroding it, causing the very real risk of increasing the leaks. More than that is a very real risk of causing the casing to become unstable and literally blowing it up the well, bringing the hole to totally open condition. Another risk arises because, according to reports, the crew was cementing the exterior of the casing when this happened. As a result, the well, if this was not properly completed, could begin to blow outside the casing. Another possible scenario is a seafloor collapse. If that happens, Katie, bar the door. I do not see any good possibilities from humans further fracturing the rock, particularly at higher levels. That is the cap rock that is holding the deposit together. I do see a possible use of explosives for favorable outcome. If a properly sized charge were applied in a shaped fashion around the drill pipe at some distance from it, say 5 feet or so, it is entirely possible that an explosive charge could pinch the pipe off, similar to a hydraulic clamp. A nuclear detonation, though, carries the real risk of giving us the full doomsday scenario on this well. I just don't like doing that. There's no coming back from the brink when you do that one. If it works, which I see as unlikely, great. If it doesn't work, there's now maybe a hole a quarter mile across leaking oil. The BP people are not talking, but this well is into a deposit that easily could top 500,000 barrels production per day for 10 or 15 years. Letting that all go in one blast seems more than foolish. The deposit is one I've known about since 1988. The oil deposit is very big. The central pressure in the deposit is 165 to 170,000 pounds per square inch. It contains so much hydrocarbon that you simply cannot imagine it. In published reports, BP estimated a blowout could reach nearly 200,000 barrels per day. They may have estimated a flow rate on a 5-foot pipe. The deposit is well able to surpass this. The oil industry has knowledge of the deposit more than they admit. The deposit is 100 miles offshore. They're drilling into the edge of the deposit to leak it down gently to be able to produce from the deposit. The deposit is so large that while I have never heard exact numbers, it was described to me to be either the largest or the second largest oil deposit ever found. It is mostly a natural gas deposit. That's another reason not to blast too willy-nilly there. The natural gas that could be released is really way beyond the oil in quantity. It is like 10,000 times the oil in the deposit. It is this deposit that has me reminding people of what the Shell geologist told me about the deposit. This was the quote. Energy shortage, hell. We're afraid of running out of air to burn. The deposit is very large. It covers an area offshore something like 25,000 square miles. Natural gas and oil is leaking out of the deposit as far inland as central Alabama and way over into Florida and even over to Louisiana, almost as far as Texas. This is really a massive deposit. punching holes in the deposit is a really scary event, as we are now seeing. And he goes on and on. He's a software engineer, works for the U.S. Army at Redstone Arsenal, Alabama. Vast experience, including education across a wide area of technical skills and sciences, blah, blah, blah. He's also a founding member of something called the New Energy Conference. And when you read stuff like this, that it could be the event that collapses everything. I mean, I read this stuff, and I don't know how in the hell to react to this. I don't know what to. Do you? I don't know. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Another email here from Tony. Yeah, I forgot to add one more thing to my last email. Tony writes, do you recall the spot where many consider the area that was responsible for the last great extinction 65 million years ago? Many say that the asteroid that hit the Earth and plunged the dinosaurs into extinction was the Yucatan Peninsula in the Gulf of Mexico. Just something else to dwell on, Tony. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, Christ. All right, back to, I want to talk with Marge, who's in the hospital, has a birthday tomorrow.
Hey there.
What's this? This is your 92nd, isn't it?
Getting close. I just wanted to call up my buddy, Mike.
Yeah.
Kathy.
Yeah.
And all the truth seekers out at sea, and tell them to take their right hand and put it on their left shoulder, and their left hand and put it on their right shoulder, and give everybody a great big hug. I think that's a good idea to celebrate my birthday. How's that?
To celebrate your birthday. I think it's a great idea. I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
And then maybe I can... You know, the doctor was here twice saying he went and looked at my chart. He would have thought that he looked at my chart before it came in, you think?
Probably, yeah. So
anyway,
what did he say?
Well, I've got a couple of doctors. One wants to operate. One's not so sure I'm ready for it and like that. So I'm hoping that they make up their cut and pick a mine because...
Are you yawning?
I beg your pardon. I'll tell you, that nice sort of music that you had in between sort of was reminiscent of Playboy Club, you know. After hours, that's nice.
That is...
Did you ever go there?
No, of course not.
Yeah, right.
I couldn't handle stuff like that. Even all those years ago when they still had Playboy clubs.
Sort of the soft tinkling piano.
Yeah.
And the, you know, and the martini glass.
Yeah.
And the noodling.
Yeah.
So, like that. But I truly, truly love you guys, and I can never ever tell you enough how much I do. And appreciate all the cards. So. And those idiots keep digging in the You think it, with as much money as they charge for all that oil, they'd have somebody smart enough to know how to do the damn job.
Well, no kidding.
Is that asking too much?
Apparently it is, Marge. Who was it today? I forget. Somebody said, you know, the usual line, if we can put somebody on the moon, why can't we stop a gusher in the bottom of the ocean? And, of course, that is that's crazy talk, because putting somebody on the surface of the moon is a matter of mostly geometry, whereas stopping this thing in the mantle of the Earth, it's under 5,000 feet of seawater, is it has nothing to do with geometry and has everything to do with the core of the Earth, for God's sake. So, you know, there's to me, there's quite a difference. It's like a non sequitur to compare the two.
Where's Red Adair when you really need him? Of course, he was doing on top of the ground.
Well, he did on top of the ground, yeah. And his idea was to explode it. And that's what I was just reading a second ago from an engineer, that the idea of exploding something that far down on the floor of the sea carries with it tremendous risk. Because what if the explosion goes off at a point, a fracture point, where the rock that... that makes up the seabed is fractured and this stuff comes gushing out. I mean, this seems to me to be a situation that nobody is really telling the truth about, because it is, because it's so horrifying. No, I mean the big truth that this could be the event that completely destroys everything.
Oh, joy.
Yeah, I'm telling you. So I don't know. I'm flummoxed here. I'm not sure what to do.
Back to, they're so damn greedy that they don't care what they do or how they do it, as long as they get their money. And if they blow up half the Earth in the meanwhile, we got ours. You get your own.
Yeah, but where the hell are they going to spend it, Marge, when the mantle of the Earth is cracked? Where are they going to spend it?
They're too damn dumb to care.
Well, oh, man. All right, we got a break coming. I'm going to put you on hold, okay? All right? Marge? Where'd Marge go?
Can you hear me?
Oh, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
All right.
Okay, Marge. We got a break coming here. We will be back. So stay with us and your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Is in Huntington Beach, California. You're listening on KTLK. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, it's going.
Yeah, and we know where. I just wanted to say real quick, one thing that people aren't, you know, focusing on, and I know it's kind of cute to joke about Beyond Petroleum, but it's British Petroleum.
Right.
It is not just an international corporation. It is a foreign corporation, owned and controlled majority stake by what is still the titular head of the United Kingdom. And Royal Dutch Shell is royal, and it is Dutch, and it is a shell corporation that is predominantly owned and controlled by another royal family from Europe. And when we start to look at all of this and what's going on, it is irregular warfare. It is economic warfare targeted against us as a republic by many of these nation states that are owned and controlled by foreign and mostly royal powers. You start to look at what's going on in the United States, there's been a great deal of discussion about moving us back into a modern age of feudalism.
Well, let me make sure I understand you. You're not suggesting that that somehow the royal family of the UK or the royal family of Holland has sent commandos over to blow this thing up, are you?
I wouldn't put it past them, but saying that it is a quote-unquote accident, I believe that these individuals, because this is British petroleum, not American petroleum, it is not for the largest portion under our control. You've seen how the laws have been changed to basically excuse them to where the cap is, I think, currently it's $10 million, and this goes to the Exxon Valdez. And if you look at Exxon and Alaska and not only, you know, the insane profits that Exxon Mobil has made in the last 5 to 10 years during the quote-unquote war, but that British Petroleum and Royal Dutch Shell own the majority stake and controlling interest in our North Slope oil. And when you think about what De Beers does with diamonds and the Rothschilds, who have now divested themselves from gold, have done with gold in taking things off the market to play with market dynamics like supply and demand, you see Arnold Schwarzenegger came out today and said, we're not going to drill in California.
Well, but and I think he said that not from a standpoint of it's time to move beyond petroleum, but because he's afraid of the same thing happening on the West Coast that happened in the Gulf. Eric, I got to move on. Thanks. I appreciate it. You know, Eric's call, I mean, that brings into focus what I was talking about before the last break. It's hard for me to focus on, no offense to Eric, but it's becoming more and more difficult for me to focus on topics. I don't care who brings them up, whether it's somebody writing the New York Times or somebody calling this program. Let me see if I can complete that sentence now. It's harder and harder for me to focus on anything other than the fact that we seem to be at a nexus of destruction where it concerns this planet. I mean, I can't seem to get away from that. And I don't normally think in apocalyptic terms. I really don't. Because I've always believed that at the last moment, or maybe not the last moment, maybe 20 moments removed from the last one, that we as a species had enough sense to realize what we were doing or the risks that we were taking, and that somewhere 20 clicks back from the last possible moment beyond this point, there's no redemption, we would stop. We'd stop what we're doing. I believed that my entire life. I believed it when I watched all the wars that I experienced in the second half of the 20th century, experienced as a witness, not a participant. When I saw all the environmental destruction, when I saw the craziness in not just our political system, but seemingly every political system, when I saw these intractable, mad, insane conflicts, whether it was in Indonesia or the Middle East or Colombia or Mexico or in this country, you know, all this stuff, I always thought, okay, but, you know, that's kind of, that's kind of the kind of madness that, is not going to crush the human species. It's not going to end life on Earth as we know it, as the expression goes. I always thought that we would have enough sense to not go beyond that point from which there's no return. And here recently being in the past couple, 3 years, I look at what's going on and I think we've gone beyond that point. Or we're so close to going beyond that point. And these weather these weather disasters. Sorry about that. This damn cough is just going to kill me. I swear it is. These weather disasters, these ecological disasters, and then something like what has happened in the Gulf of Mexico. Are they warning signals or are they final acts? I don't know. Like I say, it's getting harder and harder to even think about this stuff. Bruce is in Santa Paula, California. Hey, Bruce.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
Hi.
It's been a while since I've called you. I was listening to your the email that was written by the engineer, and I just wanted to use you, if you don't mind. I have a suggestion, an idea that might work to plug this up, and other people can hear my voice that, you know, by talking to you that wouldn't hear it otherwise. I consider quite a simple solution, hoping that the drill casing is still intact, if there's still a pipe there. If there's still a pipe, it would not take much engineering to devise a something that would be shaped essentially like a small umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
That would be inserted down into the pipe end first. Well, that's all fine because it would slide down into the pipe, but as soon as you try to pull it back the other way, it locks. Inside the, you know, it would like try to open and it would lock inside the pipe. And the greater the pressure on the bottom of it, the harder it would dig into the sides of the pipe and the tighter it would try to seal. I don't know if it would work or not, but I just wanted to, you know, to take advantage of the fact that you were discussing it.
Well, it's certainly an idea. The problem here, though, that immediately comes to mind for me is we don't know what's down there.
Right, we don't. I recognize that, but I'm just saying if it's something directly like for example, he was talking about using explosives to try to seal the pipe,
mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that there still is a pipe intact, and if there is, something, as I said, like you know, you could stick an umbrella in. I mean, of course, that's much longer and not.
Yeah, no, I get it. Your concept would you know, certainly has the potential to work,
right.
If.
And that's, I just wanted to say it so that my voice is heard around the globe with, you know, through your program, and hopefully there's some merit to it and somebody can say, hey, wait a minute, maybe we can do something with this. And, you know, if not, oh, well, you know, I wasted a phone call and a few minutes on your dime.
I hear you. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Again, I would imagine the possibilities of stopping this are totally dependent on, once again, not just the configuration that's down there as a result of this blowout, but it's also dependent on physics. On fluid dynamics. I mean, subjects that most of us don't have a clue. We may know, we may be able to say the terms, but we don't have a clue what we're talking about. And it seems to me that the only people that would know, would be the engineers from BP or, engineers who have a chance to see what's really down there. I don't even know how they're seeing. Are they sending, deep, diving, equipment down there? Are they taking, I guess they're taking films of what's going on. But to try to stop this eruption, I mean, when is an effort going to be made? Here's the part that's scary also. If they're talking about putting a dome over to collect the oil that's gushing out, does that mean they don't know how to stop it? If they're trying to just continue to go back, in a sense, not go back, but in a sense go back to what they were doing, and that is sucking up the oil out of this possibly enormous source under the sea floor, does that mean they don't have a clue as to how to stop it, or they have looked at all the clues and decided there's no way to stop it? I don't know, and I don't know how to find out the answer. We'll be right back.
Down we live. Think you're in.
before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Susan is in Squim, Washington. I love the name of your town. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Fair to partly cloudy.
I'm not a physicist, and I'm not an engineer, but I am a retired field biologist. And the ramifications of this spill, if they cannot stop it, and if the pool is as large as they believe, mm-hmm. and if it just keeps spewing, it will kill the oceans.
Right.
And if it kills the oceans, it will kill us, because that's where all of our oxygen comes from. Everybody thinks it's the trees and the plants, but that's just minuscule compared to all the microscopic diatoms, and the formation of our oxygen is in this whole ocean cycle. It's made in the equatorial regions, flows to the polar caps, and is released in, you know, like trillions of times more than any of the plants release on mm-hmm. the planet. We'll
mm-hmm.
die.
Mm-hmm.
We won't have anything to breathe.
Yeah.
So,
and you know,
these bastards will have killed the entire planet just out of greed.
The horror of this, to me, and here's the real horror, what you've just described and that thing I read from the engineer, that's terror. Here's the horror. The horror is, if this is stopped, it's not going to stop the drilling and the continuation of this insane insistence that we use fossil fuels to run this planet.
Oh, Mike, I hope you're so wrong.
Well, I hope too, but what? But if they stop it, Susan, if somehow, through some magic of engineering or science, they manage to cap this or stop it or plug it up or blow it or make it quit, then the oil companies will say, see, we can handle it. We can handle anything. Sorry about the damage. We'll go
but
ahead.
We have to have learned our lesson. We really finally have. This is our last. You know, our last lesson.
Well, we've learned it, but you and I are not BP.
Well,
or ExxonMobil.
We need to nationalize all utilities. I mean, we can't let these people play with their coal mines and their oil wells and their nuclear power plants anymore. We have to stop them. I don't care. I mean, you know, even if we have to go to war over it, we must stop them. We need to stop them. I mean, they're killing us.
Well, I...
It's very depressing. It's when you read that engineer's report, I thought, oh, words I can't say on the radio.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm like you. How in the hell am I going to focus on the bomb in New York and the flood in Tennessee when our planet is cracked in half by these bastards?
Oh, well, Jesus, you know.
It's a cheery thought.
Yeah, I know. All right, Susan, thanks.
Okay, good night, Mike. Good
night, appreciate you checking in. This is from Paula. Mike, not to depress you further, and I really feel what you're saying about the overall bad fix we are now in, but we have to consider that BP, still in charge of the disaster, may not share the goals of the rest of us. Your last caller suggested something that would plug the well. Does BP want to keep it flowing? That would make them think of only the options that could allow them to continue obtaining that oil. They would ignore options involving completely plugging the flow as not beneficial to them in the long run. Paula. Yeah, well, that's true. Corporate America, or corporate anything, corporate predatory corporations, which are the lifeblood of capitalism. As a matter of fact, calling a corporation predatory is almost unnecessary repetition. But these massive predatory corporations that define global capitalism are no more interested in ecological balance or the survival of the human race. As a matter of fact, these sons of bitches, to a large extent, would like to see about 80% of the population of the globe removed. Make it a hell of a lot easier for the survivors, and the survivors, in their minds, will be them. But they, you know, predatory capitalism doesn't consider human life. It never has. Human life is a tangential issue. And if it is destroyed, it's collateral damage and the price of doing business and all these little phrases that have crept into our language over the past 30 or 40 or 50 years. It doesn't mean anything. Miners that suffocate and offshore oil rig workers who both burn to death and drown at the same time, and civilians in Afghanistan or soldiers in Iraq who die fiery, horrible deaths. It doesn't mean anything to corporations. They don't care. That's nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It has zero meaning, less than zero. Zero meaning is when they break even on an adventure or a venture, a capitalist venture. Less than zero is when human life is lost. It doesn't matter. It means nothing. And given that reality, and that is a reality of corporatism, capitalism, whatever you want to call it, given that reality, how in the hell do you and I expect these corporations to do anything that would benefit the human race? That's Friday music. What the hell are we playing Friday music for? Let's try to get rid of the Friday music if we can. Is that programmed into the program? I guess it is. You got anything else you can just drop in there? All right, I'll see you all tomorrow night, okay? Are we ready to go? I think we're ready to go. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.